When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
It's time for Rob Gronkowski's favorite podcast, podcast number 69. Nice. Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cattles with you. We went through the draft last episode. Now it's time to look forward. Now we look at the roster. Greg tells us his thoughts about how things are layered and maybe some guys that could surprise us. Could be cut, could be traded. Let's start with the quarterback position. As always, Greg, your likely opening day starter.
Likely opening day starter would, at this point, it would have to be Cam Newton. I mean, I'm hoping for Mac Jones, but I think it's not only where he is and Cam's in his second year and things like that. That is certainly a factor. But I think when you look at Mac Jones, and I do think Bill Belichick is very excited, no matter what people think about his outward demeanor and staying at 15 and all that stuff.
His war room reaction, he didn't get naked so people think he wasn't excited. Yeah,
exactly. He didn't get on the press conference to say, I love Mac Jones. He's going to start every day for the next 30 years, and we're going to win 8 Super Bowls. Because he didn't say that.
He's the greatest quarterback I've ever seen.
He's better than – I don't even know who Tom Brady is anymore because Mac Jones is that good. Like, just because he didn't say something like that, all of a sudden it's like, oh, he didn't like the pick. He didn't want to make the pick. He was forced into the pick. It was a quid pro quo, whatever. It was all that nonsense.
Can I just jump in for a second? I had an analogy, and I want to drop the analogy now before we move on.
Let's hear it.
Daniel Jeremiah, he had the whole idea.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, he says, I don't think they loved Mac Jones because if they loved him, they would have moved up. And I think they liked him. And I came up with an analogy. I love beer. And it's like if you have your favorite craft beer at a local brewery and you can get the 4-pack of your favorite craft beer for $12.99, do you walk into that brewery and you say, you know what, because I really love this craft beer, today, even though I can get that 4-pack for $12.99, I'm going to pay the brewery $29.99 just because I love that beer. That's the analogy. Like, if you felt confident you could get Mac Jones at 15, then why would you overpay for somebody, even if you loved that somebody? Like, it makes, just like we said last, podcast, it makes zero sense. They read the board right. I think that point would be better if they didn't get to Mac Jones, like if they didn't move up and then Mac Jones gets drafted because Washington moves up or something,
right?
Then you have a beef.
Yes.
But that's not what happened. So anyway, let's move on.
Well, you can almost take it one step further. You can be like, all right, there's that package of craft beer. And, with Mac Jones being that craft beer, you could say, there's only 4 of us who really like that kind of craft beer. And I know that there's only 4 people in my area. Nobody else is coming in to get the craft beer. And 2 of the guys are on vacation. And the other guy, his wife won't let him out of the house. So like, I have a pretty good idea. I'm going to get the craft beer. So I do think Bill Belichick is very excited about Mac Jones. And I think that, in my original point that I was trying to get to before you and I both went off on a tangent was, I think, no, it's not just you. It was me too. I think that Bill is, He's going to set the foundation. He's building a house. And so he is going to be tougher on Mac Jones than probably he's ever been with any other quarterback. I mean, I think that to send a message to sort of recalibrate the program, that it's about a cheap quarterback and about a quarterback who's going to play ball, about a quarterback who's going to do this, who's going to be the hardest worker, who's going to be there all off season, unlike some people towards the end of his career. I think he's going to set a really firm foundation, and he's going to make Mac Jones crawl on hands and knees for everything that he gets this season. But that is with the end game in mind. And so I think for that reason and others, and even though I did a column the other day that said that again, I found a play from Cam Newton and a play from Mac Jones that were very similar and how they reacted to them in their systems, not apples to apples, but close enough. And I think that Mac Jones is going to be a factor because there's just certain things that he brings that Cam Newton doesn't. I don't think it's possible Cam could bring them this year. I doubt it. But unless he does bring those things this year, then I think Mac Jones, the Patriots are going to have no choice but to put Mac Jones in. And I think by that point in time, by setting a firm line, by showing the veterans on this team that might be somewhat pro-Cam, that this kid has been beaten into the ground. He's been beaten to a pulp. He hasn't been given one single thing. He's just like you guys. He came in and had to earn everything, and yep, he's earned his time. Now he's getting his shot.
I agree. Does he start as the third guy on the depth chart? Is Stidham still around, and is Mac the third guy to start the season? Just going off of what you said, to really build the story and make him, you know, deserve it and earn it and work his way up.
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, my inclination is to say he opens as number three, but I just think Mac Jones is going to beat out Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah.
And I just think he is. I think it's going to be too apparent on the field, in the preseason games, on the practice field. And I think in my sort of crystal ball, I think we're going to get to the end of the preseason, the 53-man cutdown, what have you, and Mac Jones is going to have a lot better preseason stats than Cam Newton. He's going to look better in camp, but I think Cam's going to be the opening day starter, and then we're just waiting for a matter of when, not if.
I agree with you. The only tough thing is, you know, the quarterback play is not always resulting in wins or losses, right? Like your record is not necessarily indicative of the quarterback play. What'll be very interesting is if this team's playing well because the defense is better, they're running the football, Cam's making just enough plays, and they get off to like a 5-2 start or a 4-3 start, if they're playing better than 500 football but Cam's not playing great, will they make the move? You know, will Belichick say, yeah, you know, we have a winning record, but we could be better at quarterback? And Mac Jones, he proved it. Like, he's better. That's going to be the interesting scenario, Greg.
Yep. I agree with you.
Let's move to wide receiver. Your top two wide receivers, I would guess Aguilar and Bourne. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, well, so the way I sort of do things, and I break the receivers down. And by the way, I just noticed that I forgot tackles, guards, and centers on this list. So, but those won't take very long, considering everybody's back. But so I view guys sort of how the Patriots view guys in terms of, and I didn't term them X wide receiver here, but basically I go wide receiver one is the guy who winds up on the left. That's the X wide receiver. And in that group, I have Aguilar, I have N'Keal Harry, and I have Isaiah Zuber. I think Aguilar, no doubt, is the opening day starter, unless, of course, this discussion all hinges on injuries and things like that. But
right,
they paid him a lot of money. He's playing. And a lot of times they're only going to play with two wide receivers. And to sort of answer my own questions here, Aguilar's the opening day starter. Could surprise. Look, Zuber's a guy that I could tell you this. There are people in the building that loved the kid last year. I don't know why he didn't get much of a chance, why he was sort of the last guy to get a chance. I don't know if he wasn't doing the right things or maybe not in his playbook or what have you, but I'm telling you, there are people who think a lot of the kid and think he could be something. And he really flashed on the practice field last year. So he's a guy that I think could threaten for, say, the fifth, sixth wide receiver spot on this team if he did what he did last training camp. So I think he's got a chance. And then the player who could be out of this group, obviously we all know it's N'Keal Harry. While he could be traded before training camp and all that, it's quite possible. I think it's much more likely. And look, you gotta account for injuries. I mean, look at Juwan James, the Broncos just went through the draft. They thought they had the offensive line all, you know, taken care of. And then their right tackle goes and tears his Achilles tendon.
Yep.
So you never know what's going to happen. And so it's better to at least, normally with the Patriots, what they do is they keep their guys. And then you see what happens about midway towards the end of training camp, because you never know what's going to happen. What if Aguilar goes down with an ACL? What if, you know, what if Kendrick Bourne tears an Achilles? Like, where are you? So I think N'Keal Harry is here. We'll see what he does. I know Cam Newton has invested a lot of time in N'Keal. Will that pay off? Will the light go on and all of a sudden catch fire? I doubt it, but I do think that I still think he's a player in this league. I don't know if he's a great player, but I think he could be, you know, sort of like a little Anquan Boldish, you know, possession receiver where he's just, you know, Larry Fitzgerald later in his career, big body, slower guys who just catch the crap out of the ball. And, you know, I think this is all sort of a new reset with Cam back. Mac Jones there. I think he's got a chance, but I obviously, if it doesn't work out, he's going to be gone at some point.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised by anything with N'Keal Harry. Like, that's how I feel about walking into this season. Yeah. Like last year, again, I think he has a chance to be a player like you do. Is he going to justify being a first round pick? I don't think we'll see that happen, especially in New England. But is he somebody that can make some plays? Yes, I do think he can make some plays. And I think if the quarterback play was a little bit better last year, he would have looked a little bit better. Would he have been a completely different player and awesome and off the charts? No. But he was open a number of times and the ball wasn't thrown his way. And, you know, the first season I just throw out because of all the circumstances, his injury and Brady not really believing in him, et cetera, et cetera. I would not be surprised if he contributed to this football team. I would not be surprised if he was traded after camp. I wouldn't be surprised by anything with N'Keal Harry. Let's go to the right side. You've got Kendrick Bourne. You've got Trey Nixon in the mix. You have Devin Smith. Your thoughts on that side?
Yeah, so with this position, and even this is somewhat up in the air, because normally in a traditional Patriots, like one tight end system, you get a lot of three wide receiver sets. So you have the slot. Also, now with two tight ends playing a lot, and we expect them to, I don't expect them, like, say the Patriots are down 10 in the fourth quarter. Are you going to put two tight ends, two receivers, and one running back on the field to come back? Probably not. They'll probably just rotate Henry and Johnny Smith and that. So, but let's just go with, you know, if they do have a traditional slot at some point. This is not the slot. This is the X. This is normally the number three receiver, but we don't know what's happening at slot. Normally, this is, you know, Julian Edelman would be the slot, and then you'd go to this position. But I think Kendrick Bourne's a guy they need to see on the football field to see what he can do in this offense. And he could be the slot. You know, look, he's not the traditional guy as far as his build. He's a little bit slender and things like that. But what, and you know, can he take a beating? I do think he catches a lot of balls over the middle. I think you do like, if you did put him at the slot, that he could use his speed to sort of, you know, catch a little hitch and go and go a long ways. But, you know, if he's the boundary guy, he's going to play a lot. They love him. The 49ers loved him. They didn't want to lose him. Maybe some of this Jimmy stuff is a little bit of payback for Kendrick Bourne. But, you know, Trey Nixon, the seventh round pick, you know, he's going to have to come in and learn the playbook, number one. Devin Smith, I don't know a whole heck of a lot about, but he looked okay in his circumstances. But, you know, for this category, opening day starter, no doubt, is Kendrick Bourne. Could surprise. I mean, as a seventh round pick, I guess you got to say Trey Nixon, and we'll see what happens with him. And, you know, obviously Devin Smith is a likely guy out, but again, it's all going to be proven on the field.
All right, let's look at the slot. Jacoby Myers, good old Gunnar Olszewski, and Christian Wilkinson. Your thoughts about that position? Like you said, listen, we've been spoiled in New England with Welker and Edelman. It's going to be a little bit different this year.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how Gunna looks this year in training camp, because just remembering from last year, I remember seeing him at training camp, and I was like, holy crap, he looks physically like a completely different guy. And I'll be interested to see what he looks like year three, because I thought he was a real player. I actually, probably the biggest surprise for me was that he didn't contribute more in the passing game last year, because I thought he showed really well in training camp. And so I don't understand, you know, I understand the desperation because he doesn't look the same and Edelman's gone, but I don't know why people are sleeping on Jacoby Myers as the slot on this team. That's where he's been for the most part since he's been here. He runs a lot of pass patterns over the middle. He's got good quickness. He's able to be elusive. I think he could be a good player here. And I think if you liked Devontae Smith or that sort of physical makeup for the Patriots to be a slot receiver, then you should be okay with Jacoby Myers, because all the kid does is be productive. And I think, you know, I'm a fan of his, and I would like to see him get more of a shot.
I think the one pushback, Greg, is speed, right? Like, I think people wanted that speedy kind of weapon. And when you look at this wide receiver core, not a ton of speed. I mean, Aguilar is fast. Aguilar can get down the field. Kendrick Bourne is not necessarily a burner. Obviously, Nikhil is not a burner. Jacoby's not a burner. So I think people were more talking about the speed element in the draft. And because you really did not address that, it's going to be one of the things that we question. But I agree with you. I think Jacoby, every time that guy has been given a chance, he's been productive. And until he's not productive, and think about it this way. Last year, he was productive with bad quarterback play and really no help at wide receiver. So why can't he get open one-on-one consistently? And if the quarterback play is better, he should be productive. All right, let's jump to tight end. Tight end number one, the spot one, you have Jonnu Smith, Devin Asiasi, and Matt Lacoste.
Yeah, I think this whole thing with tight end is going to be interesting come training camp, because, you know, I'm not – Jonnu Smith has the reputation for being the better blocker. I'm not really sure that he is at the end of the day, and I don't know with better coaching than Hunter Henry, who fits more of the physical profile of a Y, if he can't be a better blocker here. But we'll see. But for now, where they are right now – I think it's John, who's clearly the starter. They're paying him a bunch of money. I think the big X factor in this whole thing is Devin Asiasi. And he would make sense as sort of the number three tight end, but I don't see them. And look, they could cut him tomorrow. I don't see them letting go of Matt Lacoste anytime soon for injury issues for that reason, because God forbid Jonnu Smith and or Hunter Henry go down, and both of them don't have great injury histories, including Henry. And all of a sudden you're back starting Devin Asiasi again. If you don't have Matt Lacoste. So I assume who's a solid professional tight end. He's a great veteran backup type of guy. And so I see him going to camp, then we'll see. And I think Devin Asiasi, I think there's a few players in this category, Asiasi, Winovich, maybe Anthony Jennings, maybe even Sony Michel, who we'll get into in a couple minutes. I think there are guys on this team who it's like last chance corral for these guys with the Patriots. And that Devin Asiasi, who was a guy who came in, looked really good initially in training camp, then just completely disappeared until the end of the season. And we talked about it the whole season, what was going on behind the scenes, which is, you know, NFL could be tough for rookies. And if you're not ready for it, if you're not willing to fight back and stand up for yourself and assert yourself, you're going to get run over.
Yeah.
And I think Asiasi really struggled last year as a pro. Maybe by the end of the season, it turned around. Hopefully that touchdown pass at the end of the year was a trampoline into this year. And all of a sudden we see a confident guy who's ready to go win a job, who's mentally tough, all those things. I got a feeling the Patriots are really going to test him this training camp to see where he's at. And if he cracks again, I think it's over for him. I think they look to dump him. They'll take whatever, 50 cents on the dollar, and go with Smith, Henry, Lacoste, maybe Dalton Keene, depending on where he's at. But I think that's the situation there.
Yeah, and I'm just, as a general rule, not just with the Patriots, but I think across the league, I'm not ready to write off any second-year player. I think last year was really funky due to the circumstances. So, you know, maybe Asiasi didn't have any comfort level, and that made him feel a little bit awkward. And so, you know, I'm willing to give those guys the benefit of the doubt because of the circumstances they had to deal with. Tight end too, Hunter Henry, and you also have Dalton Keene. I've talked about this. I see Keene more as an H-back, which we talked about when he was first drafted, other than your traditional tight end. Your thoughts on that spot?
Yeah, it's their whole fullback tight end situation. I mean, look, the numbers are going to be out of control. And unless you go skinny at other places, you're going to have to cut some people. And I think Keene's here. I think, you know, if you look at it, you know, ideally, Asiasi pops and Lacoste is gone. And Keene sticks. Vitali is out at fullback. We might as well just group the fullbacks in here while we're at it. So you have at fullback, you have Jakob Johnson. You have Dan Vitali, who was an opt-out last year. But the idea when they signed him last year with Vitali was we're bringing the athletic fullback here.
Right.
Like we're getting away from James Devlin, Sledgehammer. We want Kyle Juszczyk, that type of thing, to really make, you know, to adapt more the Kyle Shanahan offense, really make them tougher to defend. I mean, if you put two tight ends and an athletic fullback out there, holy crap. Like, there's a lot of possibilities. So that was the idea with Vitali. They were always going to draft. They wanted to draft a guy. I think they wanted another player, had to settle on Dalton Keene. And he had a bit of a rough rookie season, not for the same reason as Asiasi. It's more like, you know, Keene just, he was swimming a bit in terms of the information. He was kind of like a big puppy.
He was banged up a lot too. He dealt with like two or three different injuries, right?
Yeah, but I think they like him there, and I think he if I had to pick a guy between Asiasi and Keene to stick this year, it would be Keene, because I think he gives you coverage at fullback and tight end, and so I think that he sticks. Hunter Henry, I'll be interested. I want to see the kid stay healthy for a whole season and see what he can do, because I do think he has a lot of potential. He's just, and with the Chargers, it always seemed like he was hurt.
Fun spot to talk about, running back. Damian Harris, you know, I stood up on the table for that guy all last year. Give him carries, give him carries. You've got Damian Harris, Sony Michel, Stevenson, and Bolden.
Yeah, I think opening day starter clearly to me is Damian Harris. There's no doubt. And you know, it's funny, we hear more. I don't know if it was it Mike Lombardi's podcast I was listening to the other day, and talked about how, maybe it was Chris Sims, I don't know who it was, but they were talking about how good of a player Damian Harris is, and you know, how much they think of him. And it's like, yeah, all right, you're a little late to the party. But I think the kid's a really good back. You know, where it gets interesting is, you know, everybody thinks, and it's quite possible, that Stevenson and Sony Michel are sort of in competition for the number two spot. I wonder, with Stevenson plays a lot of special teams, I wonder if he is more Brandon Bolden protection.
Yeah. Yep.
Initially than Sony Michel. I just don't know. I don't see Bill, you know, giving up on one of his first round picks. Look, they didn't pick up the option, so this is his final year. Then he's going to be a free agent. You know, what are they going to do? What are they? They're going to trade him and get what for him? I don't know. I see Bill sticking it out with Sony. You do need a couple of good running backs. I don't think Stevenson, just because they drafted him in, what, where'd they draft him? The fourth round.
Fourth round. Yep.
just because they drafted him this year doesn't mean like he's going to be something. Look at Damian Harris. He sat for a whole year. We didn't know what he was. All of a sudden, second year, he becomes like a potential starter. You know,
James White, we can go on and on. James White, yep. Same kind of deal. And I agree with you. I agree with you with Sony Michel. I mean, let's not forget this. I mean, the last time we saw Sony Michel on a football field is some of the best Sony Michel we've seen as a New England Patriot. So I think Belichick certainly remembers that. And like you said, if you trade Michel, what are you looking at getting? Like, the running back market, it isn't sexy. Like, if you look at the free agency market, teams aren't bending over backwards. Green Bay paid Aaron Jones, you know, a big chunk of money. Other than that, the free agent market was pretty much dead at the position. People know that you can get guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh, undrafted free agents at that position nowadays. If you trade Michel, what's worth it? Keeping Michel motivated last year on his contract, maybe he popped for you, or getting a fifth or sixth round pick in next year's draft. Like, I think Michel is more likely to stay than people believe. How about the pass catching backs? We got James White and J.J. Taylor.
Yeah, by the way, Nick, that was a good point that you brought up about, you know, this being the final year for him and being motivated. I think Belichick definitely takes that in consideration. I think he's a big fan. We've seen it before. Guys playing guys in the last year of their contract because he knows they're motivated. And so
And we also saw last year, why did Michel play some of his best football, if not his best football, as a runner for the Patriots when he came back from injury? You could argue it's because Michel was sitting on the sidelines watching Damian Harris do what he did, and that put kind of a chip on his shoulder, and he ran much harder than we've seen him run before. And maybe Belichick saw that and said, okay, maybe Michelle's the kind of guy that every once in a while you got to kind of poke the bear. And Harris poked the bear, and now, hey, he's on his last year of his contract. He's going to prove himself again. Maybe we'll get that same hard-running Sony Michel for a full season that we saw the last few weeks of 2020. All right, White versus Taylor. I think we all know it's going to be White. I want to ask you, though, how do they feel about Taylor and the fact that they didn't really necessarily go out there and get a Dimitri Felton or somebody who was like that fast, speedy catch guy? Does that mean they feel like J.J. Taylor might have a future in this offense?
He might, but this is going to be a spot where, you know, it comes down to numbers again. And I think what's interesting to me about this position is, look, James White was out there for a long time as a free agent. You know, talk to other teams. And look, you know, we all know he went through a lot of a very difficult situation last year, and we all feel for James White and what he went through. But as you saw this offseason, you know, the NFL is a business. It keeps rolling. It doesn't really care what your circumstances were. And James White's film last year was not very good. Especially in pass protection. It was not very good. I think it affected his market this year, and it made him basically come back here almost for the minimum. And so I think James White has something to prove, talking about a contract year and trying to cash in one last time and things like that. He's got something to prove. I am interested to see what J.J. Taylor looks like on the field. Does he take like a Gunnar Olszewski big step forward in year two? Is there a real competition at the position? I don't rule that out, considering the contract that James White signed, even with how everyone feels about James White there. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, because they are going to have some tough calls when it comes to the 53-man roster. And so I think this is – I think this used to be an afterthought. I think this is now a pretty competitive position, depending on how Taylor looks.
All right, let's group the O-line together left to right. Yep. Isaiah Wynn, Owenu, Andrews, Mason, and Brown. And you look at the backups there, you've got, you know, Corey Cunningham, Justin Herron on the left side for tackles. And then you've got William Sherman inside left guard behind Owenu. And then you've got Karras as the backup center, Marcus Martin, backup right guard, Yadni Kajust as the backup right tackle. Just overall as a group, Greg, if you can tell us your top two or three questions about an offensive line that, you know, on paper, if healthy, everything goes well, this is going to be one of the best offensive lines in football. But what are your questions about them?
Well, I think Trent Brown's my number one question. You know, where is he at? Where is he physically? Does he stay healthy? You know, he was completely unreliable for the Raiders And you could say, well, it was the Raiders and they'll be motivated now. Well, Dante's not here anymore. So we'll see. Yes, Trent Brown's in another contract year. I don't think anybody outside of the Patriots is going to pay him ever again after what he did to the Raiders and the 49ers, quite frankly, before that. And so I think he's my biggest question mark. Now, you know, to me, it's pretty clear cut that it's going to be Wynn, Owenu, Andrews, Mason, Brown in that order. I mean, yes, Trent Brown was a left tackle the last time he was here. He played almost all right tackle with the Raiders. You know, you just gave Isaiah Wynn $10.5 million for next season.
Yep.
That's not guard money. That's tackle money. So I think you got to start with Wynn there. To me, that's the group. It's always been that group. I think it continues. Kajust, a third-round pick. Will he ever do anything? Will he ever be on the field?
He said, could you, like, I was thinking about this the other day.
It's like Kaiser Soze.
he's gonna go walking out and his limp's gonna get to a regular walk as he walks away from the facility. But his role is pretty big because listen, Horan I think is gonna be fine as like a backup tackle, and maybe Cunningham's fine as like a swing tackle. But if you tell me that Kajust is actually something, again, as you said, third round pick, if he's something, now I have a lot more relief at the tackle spot because again. Yeah. Healthy, motivated, all that good stuff on paper. This O-line's ridiculously good. But is Isaiah Wynn going to stay healthy? Is Brown going to be motivated?
Right.
Is he going to be focused? Is he going to be in shape all season long? If you've got Horan, Kajust, and Cunningham to back those two guys up, I feel much more confident. If Kajust ends up being a nothing, then I do think tackle depth is an issue.
Yeah, I think they might have to address that at some point. I mean, look, Corey Cunningham hasn't proven anything since he's been here. He kept getting passed over last year by rookies and things like that. So I think he's likely gone at some point. I think they're probably going to have to go out and get some sort of veteran option at some point just to give them a little bit of safety at both tackle spots. I mean, I think Horan, depending on how much he hit the weight room this offseason, could be a borderline starter in a lot of places. So I think a lot of the kid, but he had to get a lot stronger this offseason. But I do think you're right. I mean, look, best case scenario, let's say he is healthy this year. When was the last time he played a football game? I don't even know. Wasn't he hurt in West Virginia too? I don't know, but so it's been a while. I don't think anybody, even if he's gangbusters in training camp, I don't think anybody's going to trust him.
Yeah,
to be able to do anything. He's more of like, he's back at like, even if he hits, he's still like a rookie basically. And so I don't know how much they trust him. So I think, yes, I think at some point they go out and get a veteran type, you know, maybe another Dan Skipper. You know, he's a journeyman. Love Dan Skipper, who is still in the league, mind you. I think you're right. But interior wise, I think, you know, Karras is sort of the swing guy. Sherman will be on the roster because they drafted him, unless he's some sort of disaster. I think those are the two interior guys. And I think that's about it. Cause I think you're going to need to take, let's just say Kajust is somewhat salvageable this year. You bring in another guy, I think they're gonna have to keep all three, two interior guys. All of a sudden you're full room. So you're looking for a tackle who could play guard as well. So it's gonna be a tough pull.
There's an interesting report the other day I saw when Alejandro Villanueva signed with the Ravens. There was a report out there that said that he had talked with the Patriots, and that was pretty interesting to me. You know, maybe I'm right or maybe I'm wrong here, but if you look at the Trent Brown thing, maybe it was Villanueva versus Trent Brown. And if the Patriots picked Trent Brown and trading an asset for Trent Brown over Villanueva, that's going to be interesting to see play out. If Villanueva plays well for Baltimore and Brown kind of stinks it out, then that might be one regret that Belichick has, not chasing down the Villanueva thing a little bit more than he did. Before we get to the member question of the day, I did want to ask you about the biggest story in the NFL right now, because you have a history and with this team, and you have a history with the quarterback. You know them fairly well. Of course, I'm talking about Aaron Rodgers. We don't talk about big picture NFL stuff very often on this podcast, but I feel like we'd be remiss if we did not mention the story. A lot of stuff flying out there. I talked to Rob Domofsky of ESPN on my show just a couple of days ago, and Rob said he's a plugged-in guy, and Rob said, look, I don't think there's any chance he's back. I don't think he plays another down for the Green Bay Packers. Just your general thoughts on what's going on out there and what you think might end up happening.
My general thought is I am not surprised this happened. I'm surprised it maybe took this long, because I wrote a column after the Packers playoff loss where, you know, LaFleur blew the fourth down call and along with a whole other thing, you know, like the just, you know, personnel letdowns, whether it's in the secondary or what have you. The debacle at the end of halftime in that game against the Bucks. I mean, it was just the whole thing was a crap show. And it was just, I came away thinking, and I, you know, basically wrote that suggested this was going to happen, that at some point Aaron was going to go away. He was going to get with his buddies. He was going to hear all this stuff about how, like, you're never going to get another title there. Look how old you are. They failed you. He's going to look at it and he's going to say, it's more of their failings than it is mine. I need to go someplace where I can win another title or two before I hang it up to cement my legacy. And that's the way it's played out. You know, as far as, you know, the Kumerow stuff and the Gutekunst stuff, I mean, I think that's all window dressing. I think that's Aaron sort of, you know, scapegoating Gutekunst a little bit. You know, so they're going to need somebody to blame. It's just, Nick, the funniest thing to me is, and I was there for the beginning of this. I was there for Favre's final season in Green Bay, all that stuff. And I could tell you, Aaron Rodgers set out when he became Packers starting quarterback, he wanted to be the anti-Brett Favre and in so many different ways. And, you know, the number one thing was he didn't want to throw any interceptions. So he never threw any interceptions, including sometimes he didn't even try to really fit the ball into spots early on in his career because he wanted to avoid being Brett Favre and being that sort of roller coaster. And he wanted to be the anti-Brett. He hung out with all the guys. He would invite people over. They'd do things together where Favre was very detached from the locker room at the end. And, you know, now here we are. Bart Starr played for the Packers for 16 years. Brett Favre for 16 years. Aaron Rodgers just finished his 16th season.
Yep.
And now he is following Brett Favre's playbook to try to get out of Green Bay, or at least get what he wants. Like, it's just, to me, that's the most ironic thing, that I just remember this kid, this 24-year-old kid who wanted to be the anti-Brett Favre in every single way, including how he treated people and things like that. And now, come full circle, you know, 12, 13 years later, he has now become everything he didn't want to become.
Yeah, and the story that they didn't call him before the Jordan Love pick is inexcusable. Like, I do think Rodgers has some beef with some of the things they've done. You know, nine out of the last 10 first rounds, they've drafted defensive players, and it's not like their defense has ever been really good, which is just crazy. And then you look at not calling him. Minnesota called Kirk Cousins when they were drafting a quarterback this year. Shanahan, John Lynch called Garoppolo to let him know that they were drafting a quarterback at 3. Belichick called Brady when he was drafting Jimmy Garoppolo. That's the way the league works. And the fact that nobody could pick up the phone and call a guy who has been there at that point 14, 15 years and, you know, had won a Super Bowl and is seen as one of the best quarterbacks. It's just amazing to me that that Packers front office and Mark Murphy up top can drop the ball at that kind of level. I think that's crazy. That's just crazy to me. And one more thing, Rodgers is very stubborn. You know, when I was talking to Domofsky had a great line. He said that Rodgers is an all pro when it comes to grudge holders.
Hell yeah. He remembers stuff I wrote about him.
So
when I see him,
he's one of the, like, he's cut out his own family, like legitimately has cut out his own immediate family and does not talk to them, when Aaron Rodgers says you're dead to him, usually you are dead to him. So if he's at that point with the Packers, yes, I do actually believe he is the kind of guy that would say, I'm going to sit on my ass. That's it. I'm not going to play for you. I'm done with you. So interesting stuff, because of course that could eventually affect the Patriots, especially if he's moved to the AFC, because there's a lot of talk about the Broncos. BostonSportsJournal.com member question of the day, $39.99 on the annual plan, top-notch analysis of all the Boston pro sports. And with a membership, you get access to a ton of video analysis that Bedard does on the coaches' film and direct access to him in weekly chats. Dr. Doug, 49. Great analysis. There you go. A little bit of love to begin it. Great analysis, Greg. It seems Cam never worked on his craft, just content to get by on his superb natural ability. How much time did Cam spend in the film room? Could he diagnose defenses when he was in Carolina? Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah. So, you know, this is an interesting question, and I was just looking for the story, but I can't find it readily because I wanted to read from it. But for those who want to know more, a little bit more about how Cam Newton ticks, I suggest you Google Albert Breer, Cam Newton, Scott Turner, and I think that'll do it. You should be able to pop someplace. But I remember Albert Breer wrote a really good story, and I remember when they signed him last year, I referenced this story. And, you know, there's a lot of questions about, you know, because I did this column about Cam and how he sees the offense and how he's going to get to do it. Look, I'll say this about Cam. There has been, certainly in New England, and this goes to at least the time with the Turners in Carolina, no one has ever questioned Cam's work ethic and the time that he puts in as far as film, playbook, stuff like that. Now, with the biggest question about Cam and his fit for this offense and whether, you know, can he hold off Mac Jones is just sort of, you know, Cam, the takeaway that I had from Albert's story about Cam was that Cam Newton just learns in a different way. So what I remember about the story is that Cam would have this big notebook and he would, like, you know, tape things into it and plays and have to write things and just put a dump. He just learns differently. He learns more visually than he does conceptually. And that also goes to the practice field. They learned that Cam, and this is where he was hurt last year with the Patriots. And this could be a factor in if he is a lot better this year, it's because of this. The Panthers would walk things through a lot more with Cam in terms of what the defense is going to do, what do you do here, there, what have you.
Right.
So the Panthers combined all those things, and they were able to make Cam a lot better quarterback in 2018 until he got hurt. And so, but my question is, can a quarterback that learns that way, that learns, you know, visually, is it fast enough? Is it very compatible with the Patriots offense? My initial inclination is to say no. And look, that's not to say Tom Brady was the greatest anticipatory quarterback ever. He wasn't. He was really kind of, yes, he knew what the defense was going to do. And he knew things like that. But he was more of a see it, throw it quarterback than he was an anticipatory thrower, more than people want to give him credit for. And Cam is a see it, throw it quarterback. Mac Jones is an anticipatory thrower, and I think those are the best guys in this offense. It's just, can the way Cam visualizes things, the way he learns, and everybody learns differently. You learn differently, I learn differently. It doesn't mean you learn in a poor way or that you're not intelligent or anything. You just learn differently.
Yep.
You know, can that type of quarterback who learns visually, is it fast enough for this offense, for it to go where it needs to go? I don't have the answer to that. I think we're going to get the answer to that this training camp, this season. But, you know, the initial returns were it's not a good fit in terms of what the Patriots need. But again, like you said earlier, last year was a rough year and probably rougher for Cam, changing places, COVID, all that stuff, crappy team around him, all that stuff. It was probably rougher on him than a lot of people. So we'll just have to see. I think everybody sort of has a fresh start, but I do think that Mac Jones, coming from where he does in Alabama, what he's already done, that he's changing protections and he's changing routes on the fly with Alabama, that's way ahead of what Cam Newton has ever done in any other offense, let alone the Patriots. And so for that reason, I think that Mac Jones is going to catch up quickly to Cam Newton at some point, but we'll have to see.
It's a fascinating story. It's one that's obviously going to play out all summer long. And when you talk about the big notebooks, I think of Manny Ramirez and JD Martinez, right? Like those guys have those big notebooks in the dugout, and they write down everything. And, you know, like you said, some people learn a certain way, others learn a different way. It's how your brain functions. It's like a system. Everybody has their own system. And so that's Cam's system. Well, that'll do it. Podcast number 69, Rob Gronkowski's favorite. hopefully you enjoyed it. A lot of information in this one. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back early next week to possibly, I would think, Greg and I haven't talked about it, but I would think we'd be talking about the defense and how all those things come together.
Defense.
Until then, be good.